Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, the new home.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
I will make no such promises.
The morning is evil.
We shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I've been dying to ask you, what happened to Zuko's mom?
I can't wait to get started.
Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBluFang.net. If you want extensive in-depth discussion on Korra from longtime knowledgeable fans of Avatar and longtime fandom members, then this is the podcast for you. I am your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Allie.
Hi.
Britt.
Hello.
Mel.
Hello.
Sam.
Hey.
And Jess.
Howdy.
Today we'll be discussing the recent Korra news, along with which includes the DVD release of Korra a few days ago, as of this recording. And mostly we'll be discussing stuff Mike and Brian said on the commentaries. That's basically it. Actually, news like just broke an hour before we're going to record, so we're going to start with that once we get into news. You should follow us on Tumblr, Twitter, and go to the DF forums. DongBluFang.net/forums.
Ask Dylan all the questions.
Yeah, apparently people have been asking me a lot of questions recently on Tumblr.
You didn't answer my asks.
Were usually really annoying ones.
The five of them, yes. I went on a non and I just said, hey. I was sending you a non-hate.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mel. advance notice, you should follow the DongBluFang Tumblr, or if you don't have a Tumblr, you should go to dongbufang.tumblr.com and bookmark it in advance of the Comic-Con panel on the 19th, because I will be frantically...
It's always fun every year watching him do this.
Live blogging every information from about 10 different sources. It's actually the only blog you need to follow for Comic-Con, because I will be putting everything in there. And you should do that.
Also, then follow our blogs. Like, that's almost more entertaining than the actual panel.
You don't see me doing it.
I hear about it, though. Complaining.
Yeah. Well, it'll happen, and hopefully we'll get a release date and stuff. I don't hate doing that. It'll get us like $500.
You don't hate it when you're not doing it, so
you don't hate it when it's over.
That made no sense. Okay.
No, it did.
Just a note, I will now be, I don't know how to phrase this, compressing the podcast sizes, because I finally listened to Jeff, and so the file sizes will be smaller, so it's not like an error. It's not like you're only getting part of the podcast, the file sizes are just smaller, and I'll explain why later, how I got to that. And I edited the quote Lodge intro, not that any of you noticed. And it's better now.
Because
Sam, yeah, Sam, look out for the line that Sam wanted in. You can probably find it.
Oh god, I think I know which one.
Wait, I'm trying to think, because I remember her saying it.
It's pretty obvious.
Then
I
know what it is. Don't remember
it's pretty obvious if you listen to it. Okay.
Great, go tell me what it is.
Let's start off with backwards discussion from the last podcast. Some of this seems really old now, but it was only a week ago. Nick released this Korra ebook that you can only read on an iPad.
Wait, this was a week ago?
Yeah. Or like a little over a week. And it had stuff on it. It was mostly like animatics and stuff.
Okay.
It was like
the new information. Look, the new information is that episode 1 of book 2 is called Rebel Spirit.
That's dumb.
Rebel Spirit. Do we have any productive thoughts on the title Rebel Spirit?
It's dumb.
Why is it dumb?
Because it's just like, it's not like the Rebel Spirit, it's just like, Rebels, like, what is Rebel Spirit? Like, what are you describing?
Yeah, like, so never again am I having five of you on this. It's just not happening. See, the way I interpret Rebel Spirit is... It's a cool little double, not double entendre, but like double meaning of there's probably going to be a spirit that is a rebel spirit. And also that like kind of defines Korra's personality, I feel like, a little bit. Even though I don't feel like she's a rebel, I feel like...
That's like a song.
That kind
of... That's how I saw it too.
Well, it's Rebel Yell, stuff like that. But
how you saw it.
But yeah. When, was, did, I hope she said that in chat, right? Oh yeah, okay, she did.
Rebel Yell.
Yeah, Rebel Yell. So I don't know. I like this title. What do you guys think?
I mean, out of context, it sounds just. I'm not a fan of the episode titles that they picked for the majority of the first season of Korra. So
I liked it a lot more than just having the object, which is what they did in all of Avatar.
The Blue Spirit. The Avatars. I mean,
Yeah, someone on Twitter tweeted at us that it's not the Rebel Spirit, and they're really disappointed because of that.
Sam's also
maybe they should just make all the episodes like untitled. Like that's what I would do because I can never come up with titles for anything. So
okay, well, obviously they can. So
no, that means I'd have to learn the production codes.
Yeah, exactly.
Trivia.
That's how you should do it.
Oh God!
Like a real donk thing or
I'm a trivia person.
Ben's a little whacked out. She's been awake for like 30 hours.
I'm trying to find who tweeted that at us. I'm sorry. So the best thing I heard was that all of the titles would, like a fan theory, all of the titles would just have spirit in them, and that they would just get progressively worse as they ran out of ideas.
Oh god, that makes me really upset.
Wine and spirits.
I think that was so cute.
Wine and spirits. What did you say? What did she say?
Me?
This is actually why are you doing that? Okay. So yeah, there's the title. I should just say that on Tumblr there's a title a fake episode 2 title going around that is completely false.
And oh, I love that thing.
And if you only followed the Dongwufeng Tumblr for Korra News, then you would know because I didn't reblog it because I'm not dumb. So
can we say it? I haven't seen it.
So there was a person on one of you who reblogged that and was like, "Is this real?" And they're kind of not smart. So I'm just saying. It was Allie. Okay, so.
I did. Oh, it was funny. I know it's not real. I did it because it was.
What is the name of the fake title?
It was. I don't know. The fake title was like hopeless. But yeah.
Yeah.
So the Eduardo War on Tumblr is bad words because he just literally just makes fake title cards and treats them as real, and everyone blogs them.
Wait, is he the guy who did that a while back?
He did that in book one too. Yeah. It's really dumb.
That's not cool, man.
Anyway, don't listen to him. But other news. So that's cool. Hopefully, we get more titles, and because we're not spoiling them, it's weird getting titles like close to when the episodes air.
Yeah,
that's like something we're not used to. There's other stuff in the thing. They had pictures of Escadenza, Unlock, and Tonrak. We'll get more into them in a minute.
Found someone in the background.
Yes.
Really? Okay. You should read Brian's Tumblr post on, I don't even know how to summarize into like a few words what it's on. It's on like skin color and how it's not that simple in animation.
Color theory.
And it's really long and extensive, and it's like the tone of it is like that he did it like at midnight because he was like in a bad mood and
he seemed quite standoffish.
Except it's like 15,000 words, so it's he definitely worked on it over an extended period of time.
It's crazy. Was that in response to anything?
Yeah, it was in response to someone asked CB Heck on Tumblr, Colin Heck, who's a director for Book Two, or maybe I think that was him. Then they asked why was it? Well, yeah,
it was about the skin tone of the
kids, yeah, weren't Katara's color.
Oh God!
And he was like, "It's lighting. That's not true." So Brian talks about the skin tones and. Yeah, my mind's not working very well.
Better than Sam.
Kaya, there we go. Is the same skin tone as Katara, exactly. Bumi's in the middle, and Tenzin's the same skin tone as Aang, I think. Maybe a little darker.
So, like transition from Katara to
Aang.
Yeah.
Wait, answer fast. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Sure. Thank you.
Wow. Okay, then.
I just wanted to know.
Britt is our science expert, so okay, apparently that makes sense. Yeah, but also he says...
Did you mean scientifically? Because scientifically, there was like a hodgepodge of sort of, but
sort of.
I'll take sort of.
Okay, skin tone mostly blends, but blending is an incorrect concept.
I want some like.
Yeah, but I agree with one of his main points though is that it's really counterproductive and dumb to just like tear apart people who draw Korra fan art, and it's like you made her skin tones kind of lighter. And well, it's like, you shouldn't, like, be super angry about it. Like, it maybe they did mess up on her skin tone, and that's probably not a good thing, but you should just not, like, assume the worst, because there are things like...
She didn't have the right crayon.
Yeah. Actually, I feel like that's something Allie said a lot when she was drawing me a few years ago. Anyway,
right? I wasn't paying attention.
Wow, great job.
Yeah, plus your skin, like, absorbs and reflects light differently, and different parts of, like, the UV spectrum can make it appear a different tone.
Yeah, whatever.
Especially when you're making that literally could have saved Brian like a 15,000 word post. That one sentence.
Anyway, he also includes this line in parentheses at some point, which obviously does not include the gross misinterpretations and misrepresentations of our work in this guy's work. And he links to an image of M. Night Shyamalan, which is actually the first time they've ever criticized him publicly.
It's so, not the last though.
No, as we see in a week, it becomes a theme.
It's a theme.
But yeah, so I guess so my opinion on all of this is that I really don't like Brian's tone in this post. I don't like your tone of voice, young man, but he
wow, okay.
I cannot
criticize him for being cranky.
Well, no, I understand why he's cranky, but okay, so let me talk about...
No, you don't.
There's two separate things here. There's the artistic stuff, which is kind of fine. I wish he would be less biting in his post, but I guess he's allowed to do that.
I don't understand how it is.
There's the movie stuff, which I feel like is pretty bad, because they haven't said anything before, and they're just saying something randomly now, and I don't like that.
They may not have been allowed to say anything, though, Dylan. They may not have been allowed to criticize the work openly because of the contract.
Yeah, so why are they doing it now, though?
Because nobody cares now. They may be open from that contract.
I'll bet you it's not a legal thing. It's just a professional courtesy.
I agree with Jeff.
I mean, I agree with Dylan and Jeff, is that it's kind of weird that came out all
like
of a sudden.
Loop, yeah, okay.
That...
Yeah, so the reason I don't like this is because they have their name in the credits, and apparently they took a pass over the script, and I'm not saying that they had any control over it, but they haven't told us that they didn't have any control over it.
They were at the first read-through.
Yeah, like, they were there, they had influence on, as far as we know, they had an influence on the movie, maybe even a significant one. I don't think that's true, but come out and say, we don't like how this turned it out. You can say it politely. We didn't really have anything to do with this movie, and we would prefer if there's not a second one. Like, you can make
a
post.
Are they going
that.
To do Q&A at Comic-Con?
I'm pretty sure they are.
Probably.
It's
why are you going to ask that question, Sam? Are you going to fly out to San Diego?
The Comic-Con panel is moderated by...
No!
Moderated by Brian. I don't understand that. How can he be moderating it and be the subject of the panel?
Because he's magical.
I do agree with
he's more feisty. That's why.
Yeah, I do agree with Brian Martin doing that. Instead of Mike hosting.
Not this year.
As well.
If Mike hosted it, I feel like it would be pretty awkward.
Well, Mike made a blog post recently about him being an introvert, which is...
Well, I mean, it's a blog post. Like, it's not him talking.
That's
not the point, Allie.
Yeah, I don't know what you inferred from that. But I know,
never mind.
Yeah, anyway. So I guess I didn't talk about the Comic-Con panel. It will be on the 19th at 11:15 Pacific time, which is 2:15 Eastern time.
Yay!
Yeah, so it's not as early as Korra.
Oh, no, I have work.
And
actually, I probably do too. Yeah, be quiet, you. You work too.
Who's going to be on the panel? I don't even remember.
The cast, they said the main cast.
Yeah, but specifically.
Oh, well, they literally said the main cast. They didn't specify who. So I'm guessing it's just basically the same people as last year.
Four people.
I feel like it's up there. I don't feel like finding it now. But it's just going to be the main one. And Mike and Brian. I think Joaquin's there too. I'm not sure though.
Cool.
Anyway, Brian's Tumblr post. Okay, and then the DVD stuff, which we'll talk about. Anyway, the general thing with the DVD is that it's out now on DVD and Blu-ray. You should get the Blu-ray because it has commentaries for all 12 episodes instead of the DVD, which only has commentaries for 101, 102, 111, and 112.
The animation is cray on Blu-ray.
The animation, it's like even better than HDTV. I don't know if that's
that makes sense. It's like gorgeous to watch on Blu-ray.
Really is. But, and the commentaries, I feel like, are very much worth it. However, we are going to discuss the commentaries.
So, yeah.
Can we talk about how bad the design is on the cover?
I don't know. I don't dislike
it. It's not like horrible, but it's
not nearly as good as the ones for Avatar, though, because the ones for Avatar were like season poster type deals, and this is just graphic.
Right, describe it for those of us who don't have them.
I don't have it with me. It's basically it's It's a picture of, it's a big picture of Korra, and then slightly smaller in the background is Mako, Sami, Bolin.
There's pictures of it online.
And yeah. There's like a lot, the theme is like it. Square. There's a lot of squares on the cover.
Blue.
I don't know, I like it.
And it's blue. Like it's not here, like Jeff. Where in you have when you had with Avatar when it would come out when it would be like artistic renditions of like here's Aang
okay.
in the background and that sort of. It's just it's kind of like pictures graphically thrown.
Anyway, also in the
thank you.
I'm sorry,
Dylan.
You're doing too long of an explanation, Mel.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. Also in the DVDs is the is. Puppet bending feature by our own Kevin Coppa, actually. From the Spirit Worlds, Kevin Coppa.
He hasn't been our own since like 2007.
Well, like he's a former co-host.
Well, yeah.
I mean, and also we'll talk about that in a minute. And also animatics for like an hour of animatics, which are pretty interesting. I mean, animatics are always kind of boring, but we'll talk about the highlights of the animatics. We are going to be discussing the. Everything from the commentaries. I will tell you when that begins. This is kind
so
of commentary spoilers. see, I would not want to listen to people talk about the commentaries before I watch the commentaries. I think most people don't care. But I'm just telling you, if you plan on getting the Blu-ray in the near future and you don't want us to talk about all the good stuff, because we're going to talk about the good stuff and then you're going to listen to
Janet.
That, and then there's going to be, yes, you'll be Janet like, oh, this is disappointing. Stuff. And so, yeah, just... If you don't want to hear it, then turn this off now. Well, not now. I'll tell you when. First, we have to discuss the news that broke an hour ago about voice actors for 4 or 5 roles. The biggest name is Aubrey Plaza. Will be playing Eska.
So excited!
Is that the biggest name? I don't think that's the biggest.
She's the biggest name. Yeah.
She is the biggest name. Well, Parks and Rec is.
What else has she done?
She's in Parks and Rec. She did recent. Scott Pilgrim. Yeah.
Oh, who is she?
Yeah. She did a movie recently. Safety Not Guaranteed.
She's basically playing the same character in Parks and Rec as what I imagine this character is.
It was wonderful. I'm so excited.
In Korra.
Still think Putty's.
Eska's Korra's female cousin, Densa. Who plays Densa?
Do we know?
Yes, it's in this article.
That one guy.
Aaron Himmelstein
from
Joan of Arcadia. Apparently, yeah. I don't know him. James Remar. I also don't know him from Dexter. Apparently, he's not Dexter though. Is doing Tonrac.
Yeah, Mel, you lied to me. You told me he was Dexter.
He's not actually.
I like
Dexter.
Lying to you.
Who's the Where are you, EW now? Article describes as the powerful waterbender who is Korra's father.
That's a weird way to put it. The powerful waterbender who is Korra's.
Yeah, that's a weird wording.
And
Korra's father.
Lisa Edelstein.
Yes.
From House, apparently I don't watch that show. We'll play.
Why do you all suck? House is so good.
Kaya, who theoretically Kaya is probably the biggest role of these.
I don't know.
That's why I figured it would be the like the
even
the
if
biggest,
she's
like,
not
the
know. Biggest role, she's the one I think most people are excited for.
And,
that's what I'm excited
about. And also John Michael Higgins, who the EW article says from Best in Show, I think maybe more people know him as the announcer from Pitch Perfect, is Varric, who's the new probably love interest for Sami. And
God, I'll have to cut that.
And Adrian Latourell, apparently from Sons of Anarchy, I also don't watch that show, is Unalaq, who they describe as Korra's uncle and chief of the Northern Water Tribe, Northern and Southern Water Tribes. I don't know if if we knew that part. It says
I didn't
chief
know that
of
part.
Both.
He was referred to as just chief of the Water Tribe before.
Yeah, wait,
have we united
chief of both?
So we should take with united. A grain. We should take with a grain of salt.
I don't know. I think that might be a goof a little bit.
But I don't think he would make that up. I feel like they give him that description. Dan Sneerson. He's the one who wrote the article about who broke the news of more Korra books, and he was pretty unclear on whether books or seasons. And eventually, I worked that out with him. But on Twitter, go me. And
I'll be quiet.
I don't know. I think that just might be a semantic goof. Chief of Northern and Water.
He says, I feel like maybe they both have the same chief now. Unalaq is also described as who seeks assistance from Korra.
What? That's weird. He does.
Yes, theory, Jeff.
Korra's father wants to break the Southern Water Tribe off from the unifying thing because Unalaq's policies aren't working out. Unalaq wants Korra to be his version of Avatar Kyoshi and to silence the rebellion.
Is this a theory, or is this, like, legit?
Yes. Theory. It's true. That's all true.
That sounds
about right. Shut up.
Jeff is psychic.
I think we probably knew this from Comic-Con, but I can't... There's a ton of information. I don't remember all of it. It says Book 2 is 6 months after Book 1. I didn't know that. I'm not sure, though.
I don't think I knew
that. All I took from that is Mako is a cop for some reason. I focused on that because I didn't understand.
It's been a year since last Comic-Con.
That's crazy. Still don't understand.
And they also said, now she faces an even greater threat as the physical and spirit worlds collide.
Why are they doing
There are also two new pictures. One is of Densa and Eska.
Very sinister looking.
Yes.
I think they look cool.
Eska's smiling.
Eska has the best makeup.
In a creepy way.
Eska is the girl, Densa is the boy. Repeat that to yourself, okay?
I'm not going to remember
that. Wait, I didn't know that.
Densa, dude.
I thought they were both the same sex.
Whatever it is,
someone on Twitter said they thought they're the same sex. I feel like it was pretty established that there was a
boy and girl.
It's just
like,
hard to tell them apart. Look
at the designs,
it's Desna. Yeah, you're right. It's Desna. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not gonna remember that.
Sam, what is?
Someone correct me whenever I say Densa. It's Desna.
Hey, wait, what's Sam whining about?
Anyway. Also, it looks like they're in the...
It looks like they're where?
The celebration at the Southern Water Tribe.
It's kind of hard to tell, but...
You got the colored lights in the upper left.
That seems... Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, those look like lantern, like hanging lantern things. Yeah, okay. Yeah, they showed that at Comic-Con. Yeah, so this is probably from the first episode.
No party like a Southern Water Tribe party.
And the second one is of, This is Cora's dad, right?
Tonrak,
yes. Yeah. Okay.
A friend in the background.
I wonder who that could be.
You're welcome for showing that.
You didn't find it.
Okay.
Excuse me, yes, I did.
Jeff, what did you say?
It looks like the pews are just like misplaced in this huge vaulted ceiling room. They're just so small.
Is this in the Northern or Southern Water Tribe?
Probably the Northern.
I'm not going to make any assumptions because we haven't really seen what the Southern Tribe is like.
Why is Korra's dad in the Northern Water Tribe?
Maybe because his brother's the chief and they're like working stuff out.
Why is Asami in the Northern
Tribe?
So
if you look to the left of Tonrak, Asami's in black and red. Probably we can't actually see her face, but that's Asami's model. It's not. You can't see her face. You don't.
I'm
not
sure that's Asami.
It's probably her, but we don't know for sure.
Who else is going to be? Because she's looking to expand her business, and she needs to have the favor of the Water Tribe. If this is the Northern Water Tribe, then Tonrak's probably there because he's representing the Southern Water Tribe, and it's because that's where Unalaq put the seat of government because he's from the Northern.
Interesting.
Then you've got Asami there. Because she's looking to expand her business, and she needs customers from the Water Tribe. And also, whoever that Bizbender is.
I just think all the gang would be
Varric. I don't think we see Varric in the background.
I think it's the Southern
Water Tribe. I don't see him, but he's probably there.
He could be there. Assuming this is the Northern or Southern Water Tribe, the next question is, why is Asami there? What episode? Well, we said she's there to expand her business. What episode is it? Probably not episode one, because she's supposedly in Republic City episode
one. Why is she not there, though? I mean, what if the whole gang is there?
They're not, though.
They separate.
We don't know
as them. We established
they
in Comic-Con, they are separated at the beginning
Bolin
of the book.
Bolin is back in Republic City, Mako
and
Asami in the South.
At the beginning?
Yeah,
we don't know if that's the beginning.
That's what I'm saying.
This probably
Allie.
Is not episode
one. Speculating,
yes.
Allie.
In fact,
check the dots.
Unless they move really quickly, this probably not episode one or maybe
this
even two.
Me.
We don't know if the premiere is two parts or not yet. So
I doubt it.
So yeah, that's that stuff. That news literally just came out when we're recording this. So yeah, I think Aubrey Plaza is a pretty big deal. I've seen John Michael Logan's and other stuff. He's a pretty distinctive voice. So, which is interesting that he's Varric. He's also old, and I think Varric is not that old. Bless you, Britt. That's Britt's sneeze if you haven't heard it before. Anyway, now we are going... Where's the outline? You all were talking in the chat, so I don't see it.
Bad for you.
Oh, now we're going to... Okay, no, first we're going to talk about puppet bending. So I guess, because we're going to do the most important thing first. Obviously.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Anyway, so if you want to turn off now if you don't want to hear anything about the DVD.
Turn off, Blu-ray.
So puppet bending. Yeah. The reason we're going to talk about this first is because it's by Kevin, who is a co-host from about podcasts 5 to 25-ish or something. And he's amazing.
He has a beautiful voice.
He does. I was a little, I always want to say trepidatious. That's not a word.
Well,
you say it a lot, so.
I don't think I say trepidatious.
You've said it a few times.
It's not a word. I had trepidation because there were reviews of the thing, and it was like, oh, this is for kids, the puppet bending.
It kind
of
is.
And then I watched it, and it's Kevin's, like, it's Kevin's humor style. Like, they don't, like, dumb it down. So it's good.
I didn't think it was that funny.
Me neither.
Okay, well, I like
my cat woke up.
What?
Congratulations.
Oh, just now?
Just now?
Or during your, when you were watching. Anyway,
no, my cat woke up like right now.
Okay, you said it connected to the other one. If you're not familiar with Kevin's puppets, it's the puppets of the characters and they talk and stuff. And yeah,
you mean wow? No, they're just
the description of every puppet thing ever.
That's my
they talk.
Summary. Anyway,
they're puppets and they talk.
Anyway, it's funny. It's supposed to be the beginning of like a puppet version of the show and a making of the puppet version of the show, which isn't seen. It's kind of high concept, and they don't explain it at all. The best parts I feel like are Mako and his scarf. I think he refers to it as Mako too, and it's like connected. The puppet is the scarf is like connected to his like hand or something. It's pretty funny. Bolin gets paid in noodles for his work, and he complains about that the entire time. And then in like the next time on, he brings in his Iroh puppet, which is just his Zuka puppet with a patch over his eye, like of an actual eye. That might have been the best. That might have been the best part.
That one was funny.
And the puppet's like, "Why do you think I'm Zuko? I'm nothing like Zuko." And yeah. Anyway,
that's Iroh Junior, right?
Iroh, General Iroh.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's Uncle Iroh.
Zuko Junior. Junior.
Yeah, I need to refer to him as General Iroh. Anyway,
I mean, yeah, he's not Junior because
there were two General Iroh's. Though that doesn't.
Yeah, you can't just say General Iroh.
Iroh.
Well, no one refers to Iroh.
Let's say Zuko Junior. Junior. Yeah, I've been calling him Zuko Junior. Junior.
No, you've been calling him Junior, but he's not even
senior. Senior. Senior.
Okay.
Your senior.
Yeah. Good. Congratulations to Kevin. Check out the puppet bending. I think it's pretty funny. And I don't know. It's just it's good job, Nick, for putting fandom stuff on the DVD. I guess
I think it
should have
been on the DVD.
Hey,
it was
funny. Good to get him back on the podcast for one episode.
Yeah, I haven't talked to him in a while, but we should get him back on. I'm gonna push this back. Okay, let's start going over the highlights. I'm linked to the highlights within within the podcast description, and you can find them at dongfang.net and dongfang.tumblr.com. And when I say highlights, I mean I have, well, like 3,800 words of my notes during the commentaries. So you should, it's extensive, and I put all the important stuff there, often in exact quotes. So go read that. We're just going to read them anyway. We're going to do the most important stuff first. There's two really important quotes that we need to go over. So let's get to that. I feel like maybe the more important one is them actually explaining stuff in the finale. And the only reason... Oh, well, this isn't what I want. Let's do this, and then we'll do what I was going to do. Okay.
I could be wrong.
We all know what you're talking about, Dylan.
Speaking in pronouns, no one knows what you mean.
Dylan, things that go on inside Dylan's head. Okay. So...
Stop talking yourself.
Brian explains why Korra...
Wait, did you just talk in the third person?
Like a minute ago, yeah.
I had to process it.
Oh, yeah. Where were you?
Yeah, okay, anyway. Brian explains why Korra can airbend despite Amon taking her bending away. And the only reason he says this is because Steve Blum, who's in the...
Steve Blum? Excuse me? Steve Blum.
Blum or Blum.
Blum.
I think it's Blum, but it should be pronounced.
Grammatically speaking, it's Blum, but I feel like it's...
Everyone says Blum.
I watched the commentary. I don't even,
he says it like that.
I don't even remember. Anyway, he asked Brian. He's like, why does this happen? I don't think he would have explained it otherwise, which is bad. But anyway, the quote is, the chi flowing through her body, ... You can use water bending where they make it glow, and they're clearing out those pathways. They can open it up so the chi flows better, referring... Dylan insert, referring to healing. Back to quote. What Amon did is that he took that technique and he used it to hurt people. He used it to block those pathways. That's philosophy Mike and I believe in. Anything can be used for good or bad. Any philosophy or any ideology. It's really in the person's intentions and how it manifests. These things aren't good or bad. It's just there. So she hadn't opened up that particular chi path. Being the avatar, she has crazy chi energy flowing. So he was able to close the ones he could detect, not the one she hadn't opened yet. He couldn't feel it.
That's sneaky.
Yeah.
Hooray, we got an explanation.
I should explain that in the show.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I know I said, like, I feel like they pulled that out of nowhere, but it feels like if they explained it in the show, it would have been, like, I guess more acceptable, but I still am, like, kind of not.
It would have taken, like, a half hour to explain in the show.
I mean, well, they could do it.
They should have maybe
Okay, I feel like there's two separate issues here. One, does this absolve them not showing it in the show?
No.
And two, does it make any sense, the explanation?
Yes. Well, it makes sense, just doesn't really absolve it, I think. I'll go ahead.
Jeff, what do you have to say on that?
Just kidding.
I would have accepted it if they put it in the show. I was like, okay, well, that makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
So, okay, I feel like this explanation, first of all, it doesn't absolve the show being, the finale being random and dumb. But the explanation itself doesn't... They never really have ever explained how chi works with bending. We just know that it is there. So, like, when we're having a really complicated thing that happens that's against our expectations, and they try to explain it with something that we already don't have established very much. Like, I don't think it had been established before that there's different chi paths for different elements.
It hadn't.
No.
I have never heard that before. Like, that, so I don't hear this explanation. I'm like, oh, that's fine. I'm like, why? I didn't know it works like that. Like, that changges the whole perception of bending to me.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes they, like, explain things by introducing other things. So, like, it's sort of like par for the course, I feel like, in the Avatar universe, or Avatar storytelling style, for them to explain a new concept like this.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I feel like they've done this before. I don't think it's a good thing to do.
It's not.
It's not something they should be doing. And
I kind of feel mad, because how many podcasts do we spend trying to figure out how taking away bending worked? And it's just this.
And it's something that we could never have guessed. Also, interestingly, the way he describes it, it's more like we had these discussions during Core Book 1. Is it chi blocking? Is it is it energy bending? It seems like this is actually chi blocking. Chi, like something involving the chi, water bending through the chi.
Yeah, it is.
But how can the best healers in the
sea so mad?
It also establishes a new...
Okay.
Well, Britt, I thought you would be happy that this has nothing to do with the brain.
Well, I do. It does. But they made it seem like it had something to do with the brain. Instead, it's just energy bending. So now it's like all the worry that I had was for nothing.
So not only does this change how we perceive bending through different chi paths, I also think it establishes that water benders can manipulate chi, which we didn't really know before.
Like, water bending is the most OP element ever.
Like heal.
OP. Well, we knew that there's healing. I don't think they'd ever explained healing involving chi flowing before.
No, they hadn't.
Well, when Katara went to the healer in the Northern Water Tribe, you know, you can kind of see that their model is kind of very clearly that it was the chi paths of the body.
Do we know that those are chi paths, though? It could be something completely different.
We didn't know it. I just sort of assumed it was.
They talk about it. I'm pretty sure they even mentioned chi.
Mike and Brian keeping this high concept thing like chi in the background, I think was a good way to approach Avatar, and they did this for a lot of like things that aren't easy to explain, fantastical things that just don't, or like you can build upon them if you just like it's, oh, it involves chi. But when you have to
explain it,
but when you have a major plot point that revolves around something that you haven't really got in depth in before, I think that's definitely a big flaw.
You just throw the answer in our DVD commentary, and that makes me mad.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, why do you do that?
That's not how you do things. You can't make something have something make sense. You have to explain it. TV shouldn't have to be explained.
And as other people, I think, have pointed out on Tumblr, this also doesn't help why she just randomly airbended.
Exactly, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So he does say in the commentary that...
she cares about Mako.
That is, like, she needed to be in this situation of someone she cared about so much in danger. But, like, why does that bypass all the spiritual stuff she should have to go through to airbend?
Yeah. Love is the greatest.
I mean,
spiritual
love,
is the greatest
love,
thing.
Love based in a romance that everyone hates triumphs at the end, yeah.
Don't say that, Mark. Don't say that, Dylan. There are plenty of people who love Makora.
Yeah.
There are, unfortunately.
This is true, unfortunately, yeah. Okay. Let's talk about that. So that's number one thing that they tried to explain. Okay, so at some point in the commentary, they're like, 25% of this commentary is us defending Mako's honor, which is true. They talk about Mako a lot, and they're like, Mako's not terrible, because they obviously, like, as Jeff asked at the panel, like, did you see the reaction to Mako coming? And Mike said no. And this was recorded in the beginning of December in 2012. So, obviously...
Oh, the commentaries?
Yeah, so we just hadn't, like, heard them between then and now, so they'd actually responded to it before. And also, this is why... Oh, Jeff, this is why Mike said... we may have said this before. I think we said this before, but Asami was originally evil. He says that in the commentary. I think that's what he was referring to, but it actually wasn't out yet. Yeah. So, let's read the exchange between Mike and Brian about Mako and Asami talking in Skeletons in the Closet. It's this, like, very short scene when they're underground with Hobo Dude, Gomu, and maybe General Iroh at this point, I'm not sure. Anyway, Mike says this is supposed to be their breakup moment. We tried to play it more subtle, where both Mako and Asami realized it wasn't working out and said their goodbyes. It's a moment where it's not appropriate to have a big breakup argument or something. It might have been a little too subtle. Brian, Mike and I look at it like, eh, it's one week of George Lucas. And when he says that, he's referring to the George Lucas repeated tendency to go back and edit the Star Wars movies many times. I'm continuing the Brian quote. We could hit it a little more on the nose. Mike, for all of you who are still Mako haters out there, they had a breakup. He was good to go.
Good to go. At least good to go.
Good to go.
So I think that phrasing of good to go is, I'm not going to be like, oh, that's super sexist, but it's a little bit sexist, that how he phrased that. I don't think Mike's a sexist, but, like, he should have said that better.
They're still not forgiven for this. Like, it doesn't, like...
So we kind of knew already that this was supposed to be that moment. Like, you could tell that they're trying to do it, but it didn't actually.
It's not acceptable.
I agree. So I think the most interesting part of this quote is Brian saying that he would want a George Lucas this. So, like, he thought it was bad enough that he actually would change it if they were going to change it.
Well, at least that's good, but, like, I still don't forgive them. Like, I know they're trying to, like, redeem themselves with, like, oh, we meant for it to be like this, and it was maybe, like, a little too subtle. Like, no, you can't.
I think it's interesting. Trying. If this scene was specifically a breakup scene between Mako and Asami, they said, we're breaking up, okay. I still don't think I would have liked Mako and Korra at the end.
Me neither.
Because it was still happening, like, a very soon after they broke up.
I just hate everybody.
Well, in general, yes.
Well, that's another story, Sam.
So, the big question is, does this explanation absolve them of...
No! I'm going to say it right now. No.
Allie, no. Mel, Britt, Jeff, Sam?
I don't care.
I have...
Okay. Okay. Mel, did you go away?
I'm here.
Okay, what do you think of this?
Are you Yeah, I was paying attention. The subtle breakup deal? I mean, I understand the idea, and I like the idea behind it that, you know, there was no need for them to have a huge moment where they say, we're breaking up, because, you know, they're hiding out, you know, in this tunnel underground from a mom. The idea of relationships and the politics that go in relationships is unimportant at the moment, because you don't, in the middle of a war, say, are we breaking up? You know, that sort of thing. So I understand that. However, that being said, it could have been written a little better I don't want to use the word blatantly, but because they did want it to be more subtle. To make more obvious the fact that they were both understanding that this was a breakup, essentially, are my thoughts on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Anyway, I don't know. I feel like this is bad. I appreciate them saying they would change it. That means they understand the problem, at least Brian does. Mike seems to be a little more stubborn.
I'm starting to have a little more problems with Mike than Brian.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that. Okay, so now that we did the two most important things, we'll get to more details later. But now I just want to talk about impressions of actually watching the Blu-ray. And one of us who watched the DVD just left, so she's coming back, though. So me and Mel will talk about our impressions of watching the Blu-ray, because the others here weren't on their stuff. That's not actually the word I'd use there, but anyway.
Well, excuse me after being broke, okay?
I have money to buy Blu-ray.
It's actually only, like, 19 on Amazon right now.
I don't even have money to buy food, man. That's what my mom does.
Okay.
I don't have $19,
anyway, Dylan. Mel, what were your... Okay, so talk about your... Really?
Except not at all.
What did you think of the Blu-ray? Do you think it's worth buying? Did you like the commentaries? Did you like the special features? And what did you think of Mike and Brian and other people on the commentaries?
So many questions. In terms of just watching, like the experience of just watching the episode on the Blu-ray, like that alone, I think is worth it just because the animation was just so amazing on Blu-ray. I mean, the animation alone on Nick and Nick HD, because that's what I was watching it in, was, you know, good to start with, but on Blu-ray it's just really, it pops so well, and it just looks really great, and it's a really great watching experience. In terms of the special features, I mean, I like them. I didn't really watch the animatics too much because they can get a little boring because it's basically like moving storyboards, but and I always enjoy Kevin's puppet shenanigans. But in terms of the commentaries, Janet's on like half of them, or almost all of them. I think she was maybe not on like three of them, and she is very funny. She also is a major like fangirl for the show itself,
which is wonderful.
She's good. I actually also liked having Seychelle Gabriel on there. That she was good. She didn't talk much, but she's a cool person. I wish they had had PJ Byrne on, but. I mean, I get that there's maybe scheduling conflicts or something, but I don't know. It just, you know, everyone else was on there but PJ Burns, basically. And
I think they just probably pulled whoever was.
I get the feeling that they recorded these in the span of maybe the same week. So
I think it may have even been one day.
You think
like
it was
one day?
Yeah, maybe. It was like one or two days.
Maybe. Well, yeah.
There's like three different ones of these that they recorded in segments. There's ones with Mike, Brian, Janet, and David. David Faustino. There's Mike, Brian, Ben, and Jeremy, the track team. There's Mike, Brian, Steve Bloom, and
Joaquin
Phoenix. And there might be just Mike.
Joaquin
Brian
Phoenix.
And... Joaquin dos Santos.
Wow.
There might be. Is it just Mike,
David...
Brian, and Janet?
No,
oh, Mike, Brian, Janet, and Seychelle.
It's right. Mike, Brian,
so
Janet, Seychelle, and then occasionally Mike replaces, not Mike, occasionally David replaces Seychelle.
Well,
so he is not,
sorry.
Oh, David. I don't know, I'm unfamiliar with him outside the context of Korra, and all I know about him as a person is from Comic-Con and these commentaries, and I'm not the biggest... It wasn't the best impression. He's definitely is. I mean, I give him props for defending his character. Like he loves Mako a lot, but he does take it a little over the top sometimes.
Oh, what about Mike and Brian? Does this change your perceptions of Mike and Brian? Did it add to it?
Well, first of all, I can never tell their voices apart. So
really,
yeah. I mean, now that you told me who was set, like that one time when I mentioned someone saying something, and you said, "Oh, that was Brian."
Yeah.
Now I can hear it, and I can picture their faces talking. But I do like. I'm not the biggest fan of the fact that, you know, they waited until commentary to explain some of these things, but the fact that they did have an explanation period, and, you know, they at least knew a little bit of what they were doing and the reasoning behind it, I appreciate that in terms of the commentary, and the fact that they did eventually say, this is how it works, and we understand that wasn't unclear,
mm-hmm.
or that was unclear,
mm-hmm.
so.
Right. Yeah, I would also definitely recommend getting the Blu-ray, I mean, if you have a Blu-ray player. I know a lot of people don't. I mean, I think even the DVD/Blu-ray format is becoming out of date of people, because you can just get digital downloads. So, yeah, but I don't know. I still, a lot of people definitely do. I mean, Mike and Brian in this Mike's like, I feel DVD commentaries are so 90s. which is kind of a little insulting to everyone watching, but whatever.
Hey.
The 90s were a good time.
The commentaries are definitely the best part of it. The fact that they have 12 commentaries for every one for every episode is pretty astounding, and you got to give Nick a lot of credit for that. Also, Nick should be given credit for the fact that this is Nick's first Blu-ray ever. And
I didn't know that.
They, like, knew to put it... Well, first, Nick's super behind on the time, but they knew to do it for Korra, which is great. There's maybe not enough special features. Like, I feel like animatics are super easy to put on the DVDs. I might be wrong, but I feel like they have those made anyway. And the puppet bending, I already said credit to Nick. So you want to get it for the commentaries. I personally wouldn't get it just for the episodes, but even though it is in an amazing, amazing quality, like, I do like having them, but the commentaries I would get it for. My impressions of the people, Janet's pretty amazing. Everything she said was
Janet's the best.
Everything she said was wonderful. David Faustino's he's always joking whenever he talks, and it's always jokes based off.
I thought you were going to say he's human, and I was like, what?
Well, it's always jokes based off him being like an egoist. I don't know if that's a word. Like him, him being super self centered, and like it's jokes about that. So I don't know if he is in person.
I'm never detached from my ego.
Yeah. I don't know if that's how he is as a person, but that's like it gets a little grating because that's just all he says, and he's like he says several times, "I'm looking at my muscles," referring to Mako.
Oh God.
Yeah. Anyway, he's I don't know. I feel like he's probably fine, but
he also his favorite phrase is "He's not so bad, guys."
Seems to say that a lot. Yeah.
He's terrible.
It was Ben and Jeremy, the track team, having on a commentary. Probably not the best idea. They're kind of boring.
Wait, which commentary were they on?
They're on a few of them.
I don't mind them.
They at some point they distort the voices. One of them gets a chipmunk voice. One of them gets a super distorted voice. And it's basically the worst, and it's almost impossible to listen. It's only for one act of both of the episodes that they're on, and it's pretty bad. It's interesting at one point.
Why do they do that?
I don't know.
Because I think they're funny.
I don't know if that was them or the audio person who's doing that. I feel like they're definitely aware of it the first time. But, yeah, anyway. It's very interesting hearing... there's one super interesting thing Jeremy said about the musical... He says there's only one musical cue for the entire flashbacks in Skeletons in the Closet. And it was like a duet with the Eru representing Tarluk and the cello representing Noatak, which is super interesting. Like, I wish there was more of that. But a lot of the stuff is kind of boring. Jeremy at one point talks about his three-year-old daughter, and it's cute and stuff, but I don't know, and Ben talks about sound design, I don't know, they weren't the most exciting.
Was the part about Brian and the show's main theme in that, or was that in a later commentary? Cues, he's the one who usually comes up with the cues.
Mike's the one that usually comes
up. Brian says Mike always knows
when to bring in the main Avatar theme in Korra.
Can't Mike just say things for himself?
Brian does talk like Mike said this a lot. Seisho Gabriel, her voice is basically Asami, except 80% more like Valley Girl. That's how I would describe
it. From
Yeah. Instead of Asami being, she's like creaky voice, that's not it. Non-linguistic people. But anyway, she's cool though. Solid. And Janet, like, loves Asami, which is amazing. And
Janet's, like, obsessed with
you have to ship them now. One point she says Janelle, which is amazing. Is it Jen Shell? Yeah.
I think she says Jen Shell.
Okay, yeah. But anyway, it's awesome. Joaquin Dos Santos never really says much, which seems to go along with it. He says some
interesting stuff. That's what you put in your notes.
Steve Blum, I don't know why he's on there, Steve Blum, because he doesn't have much to say other than...
He made an Amon joke.
This is how I voice Amon. He comments from the point of view of a fan. Mike and Brian, it's interesting because I watched all the Avatar commentaries, maybe even twice. Even more so than the other times, Mike is way more talkative. I'd say he talks about 80% of the time, maybe in general 80% of the time, and then 90% of the time compared to Mike. But yeah, Brian he's also more open. Like he talks about life philosophies and stuff while Mike very much sticks to Avatar. At one point, Brian talks about being a vegan and how that related to, like, contradictions within, like, he became it, and contradictions within when extremes meet. It's interesting and personal and really cool. Whenever he says...
He's an introvert. He may have these kind of deep-seated beliefs, but he just doesn't talk about them.
Yeah, well, either he doesn't feel like it's appropriate to talk about them, or he is more introverted. And when he says stuff, feel a lot when,
to talk about, but they may just be personal, and he doesn't want them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like criticizing. It's just he didn't talk as much as all I'm saying.
He's just sticking to Avatar.
And yeah. All. Anyway, and it's another thing is Brian, as you saw in that quote, Mike seemed a little more not defensive, but sturgeon. I don't know if that's actually what I'm trying to say.
Sturgeon.
That's a fish.
Sturgeon.
No, that's a word, I think.
Sturgeon is a word. It's also a fish.
Yeah, anyway.
It's a word for fish.
Brian's like, yeah, maybe we could have changed that. Maybe we did that wrong. And Mike's like, this is what we are trying to do. And
Steve Bloom's a mom joke, though.
Someone tweeted us. I would encourage, they tweeted us something like, nah, I'm starting to think Brian does more work on the show. Because Brian talks more doesn't mean he's more important to Avatar. Brian does the art stuff, Mike does the writing stuff. That's basically how it works.
You're still ignoring Steve Bloom's mom joke.
My God, Mel.
He makes two, yeah.
He makes two?
Yeah.
I missed one.
Yeah. Okay, so one of them is when, this is another important quote, so let's do this. Brian, they're talking about the murder-suicide scene. Brian, incredibly, we got away with it, and that's pretty much all we can say about that. Steve Bloom, I have to say it, I'm on a boat. And he said that immediately after, and then Brian's like, Brian, this guy was just a total jerk the whole season. He realizes the best thing for the whole world and society is they are not a part of it. Talking about Tarlok, which is pretty deep and awesome. But so that's another thing where they're like adding meaning to where it wasn't in the finale, and even with that explanation, I don't think that properly, like...
I thought that's why they died.
Because they were, you know...
He knew they were evil, like, yeah.
Like, you can assume that that's why he's doing it, obviously, but it's like a little random, I feel like.
Well, any explanation
I
think Jeff's probably right. This is one of the things where if you explain it too much, it might not be as powerful, but at the same time, it adds to the rushing and unexplained stuff in the finale. Which isn't to say the scene wasn't amazing, because it was probably the best scene in the show, but...
I mean, I never thought it was unexplained.
Well, we discussed.
I mean, it's pretty obvious. Facial expressions,
what they thought.
Like, well, you can't just simplify someone's motives for something that.
I mean, but it is pretty obvious if you think about it.
Okay, I understand like why what they're saying, and they had a flat hole. They are dedicated.
I think you're complaining about something at this point.
I definitely complained about this last season, and it's. I feel like that's all they thought it was, and I maybe should have thought about it more. I don't know. It's something that's so deep and, like, it's such a huge thing that it can't just be really, for me, simplified into something so simple. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. I said simplified into simple, which is not good. But yeah, I guess those are general impressions. Let's get into some specific stuff, but first we're going to plug two things. The first of which is Mel and Britt's new podcast. Dark Wings, Dark Words. It is a Game of Thrones / Song of Ice and Fire podcast. Oh, you added that to the iTunes page. Good job. Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
I was going to comment on that. Do you show that? Anyway, if Game of Thrones is 18+, children do not watch it. But if you do watch Game of Thrones / read Song of Ice and Fire, you should listen to Britt and Mel along with two random people.
One's British.
That's one of them's British. Jonathan's pretty awesome. You should tease
he
all.
He is actually cool. Really good.
Oh, awesome, too.
Yes, you were. Oh, you have two interviews. Oh, the rave reviews are coming in. Let's.
Ooh,
let's
one of them is from me.
Dire Wolf of Stark says the hosts know their stuff. I don't read the books, but I really enjoyed the first episode. Can't wait for more. I think that's Mel.
Sock puppet, dude.
What?
Oh, look at this rave review from Jay Marius. Some of the panel seems a tad green. Some show notes and preparation might be helpful. I'll stick with it for now. The rave reviews are pouring in.
I'll stick with it for now. That's more than I could hope for.
Yeah, really.
He gives you 4 stars for effort, he says.
For effort? Wow.
That's all a right. Lot of stars. I am perfectly okay with getting really. 4 stars for effort.
Okay,
that's a lot of stars for effort.
Okay. But actually,
that's how much interest effort we put in, guys.
Mel and Britt did a really good job on this, actually, and there's a lot of really good discussion.
I
feel like they could use the Sam, but I think other than that, it's pretty good. Use the Sam.
We might get a Sam
and get Olive to talk more.
Hey, what about an Allie? I watch Game of Thrones.
An Allie is half of the time productive to the podcast, half of the time counterproductive. So that's just what you get with an Allie.
What's a Sam then?
A Sam is someone who adds. Humor content while
also Sam is you. You are unique.
I'm the only
you are the unquantifiable
Yes.
You might be the Avatar.
Anyway, well, you should check out their podcasts on iTunes.
How many other co-hosts are there?
There are two other co-hosts, but we might throw some other people on. I don't know.
I would recommend. I think three is a good number of people to have.
Me.
So, like, as of this, as you can tell from the current podcast that we are on, five people is probably too many people to have on a podcast.
Dude, this is what was the biggest number was about 12, wasn't it?
Yeah, we went over that on the unaired so far 100th podcast.
That's a secret.
Yeah. Anyway, it's not a secret. You can check on iTunes.
No, I was kidding.
Yeah. I know. Anyway, the second thing we have to plug is Audible. You can get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/FTSW. Who has a book?
Me, I told you.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, though.
It's The Alchemist. I'm bad at explaining, but my friend recommended it to me after reading it in her intro to linguistics class, and it's just really good. It's about, like, a traveler who just goes all over the world, and it's so good.
Allie, do you want me to explain it?
Yes. Have you read it before?
It's an I can never say this word. Allegorical tale about this sheep. Shepherd.
Who's it by?
No, it's about a sheep.
Oh, it's by what's his name? Paolo something.
Here, I have it here. It's by.
Oh, a fable about following your dream.
Paolo Coelho.
Okay, it is on Audible.
He goes basically what happens is the shepherd has these dreams about a hidden treasure in the Egyptian pyramids, and it's his story about going to find this treasure, and it's a really good book.
What does this have to do with alchemy?
Okay, so you'll read and find out.
Exactly.
It's only 4 hours, apparently.
It's really, really short. It's short.
Anyway, it's narrated by Jeremy Irons.
That by itself is
Audible. Yeah, you can...
See, I told you this was a good recommendation.
Yeah, go check it out on Audible. You can get a free download of that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, good job, Allie.
I was about to say, how come I never recommend books? Because I don't read them.
Wow, that was like the shortest like mystery story I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go over the let's go over my bolded stuff on the commentary highlights.
Go get it.
So they talk about, they've kind of talked about this before, of Nick at some point putting up a wall on Cora being a girl. They do clarify that in the beginning Nick is like, do whatever you want, and then but then eventually they run into problems. Brian, this is me summarizing, Brian, ran into a battle making Cora a girl. Some departments, for silly economic data reasons, said series with female leads don't perform well. Janet says, the sexism department. And then Brian says, now this is quotes, people who were resistant to the idea eventually just said, let's let the two men do the girl thing. Which is, I feel like that's like,
that's like
such a great way of describing, like, even though he's still like being super biting to them and saying they're sexist, like he's saying they're sexist despite the fact that they're signing off on the idea, because he's saying they're doing it because Mike and Brian are like the creators. Yeah. Anyway, he says not a calculated thing, just an idea that felt right about making Cora girl. He said they always had strong female characters, which is a phrase that that's probably a phrase you should try to avoid. I've seen people say that that's kind of insulting.
Strong female characters.
Well, it suggests that there's a difference between female characters and strong female characters.
Yeah.
There is no differentiation made between male characters and strong male characters.
Yeah.
So you don't need no man.
So I wouldn't criticize Brian for this because it's with good intentions, but this isn't a phrase he should be using, in my opinion. And I try to avoid using it whenever I can. I apologize if I use it.
I like Joss Whedon's quote where they asked him why he writes such strong female characters, and his response is, because you're still asking me that question.
Yeah. And so. Continuing the quote, by the time it came out, just so happens, Hunger Games, Brave, just the sort of blitz of all this stuff. Not like we were trying to be part of any movement, because they started working on it years before, Dylan insert. Continuing quote, strong female characters, he says it again, why is this even an issue? Oh, was he quoting Joss Whedon there?
He might have been, because Joss Whedon, I believe, even followed up with that exact statement.
Yeah,
possibly. Why is this even an issue? Yeah, so, anyway.
He might have been saying it himself.
Yeah.
Continuing quotes, glad we got away with it. Satisfying moment was they tested with some kids. They had to pull that question out of the boys. Are you bothered that Cora's a girl? And he says, they were like, what? No, she's awesome. So we kind of had heard that story before. That's pretty cool.
I think they said that before. Or someone.
They've said something similar to that, yeah.
Yeah.
They haven't said in that much detail. continuing on with bolded stuff, and then we can get into stuff people specifically like. Oh, say, so this is Brian talking about with the first time Seychelles on a commentary. We're going to make up a fake story about how we met Seychelles. We're going to obscure the context.
Wow, good job.
We rode on an airplane. I like how thousands of people probably read that on Tumblr and now have seen that, and I didn't even know. We rode on an airplane with Seychelles. She was wearing Katara boots. That was a separate thing. That's just they're saying she wore boots that look like Katara. He says they're going for a wakeboarding event or something. Table read. There's a table read for the wakeboarding. We were like, I really like that actress's voice. When that wakeboarding competition didn't work out, we're like, she was really good in that wakeboarding competition, had her read for the part. Yes. So, yeah. I don't know if that's
what
a thing now.
What is the point of this fake story?
It's saying they're trying not to talk about the movie.
Wakeboarding equals The Last Airbender,
yeah.
Jeff.
Yeah.
That's what, okay, get it.
Yeah.
You got there?
Anyway. Okay. So this is, again, Mike and Brian. So they don't actually comment negatively, but you can tell that they just don't want to talk about it. And to the extent that they're making up a fake story for it, which is kind of a joke, but...
I mean, it is their baby that kind of got murdered.
Yeah, so. Like, you can... Let me rephrase my
question. I mean, really?
If I were Mike and Brian, I'd be pretty furious that they have one of the best written kid shows ever, and it turns into one of the worst movie scripts of all time.
Yeah.
How that happens, I would be furious, but they held their tongues, and they just randomly... I don't like the way they specifically have handled it in these two instances, I think.
But like,
funny as I think this is, I don't think it's maybe appropriate.
For the situation they're in, they're handling it pretty well, I think.
Well, I think keeping quiet about it is...
Dylan, you don't understand, like, film business. You don't understand animation. They're working for Nick, which is a huge company.
Well, I understand why they
wouldn't be... Who was run
by
Viacom.
I understand why they wouldn't
be
allowed... I understand why they wouldn't be allowed to talk about it, but they're talking about it.
Yeah.
Like,
they're
not.
But you were mad at them for not talking about it, like, 2 seconds ago. They're doing their
best. Wakeboarding is fun, okay? I used to wakeboard all the time when I went to the beach.
This is a thing now, apparently. Okay.
I
was being serious. I actually did wakeboarding.
Oh, you did? Cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
I wakeboarded too. High five, Mel.
Continuing on with important stuff. Aang,
in the virtual world.
The Aang, I don't know the technical name for Aang Memorial Island, is a museum.
Avatar Aang Memorial Island.
Yeah, there we go. Is a museum / memorial dedicated to Aang's journey. And he says... this is something that he wasn't, like, ever written into the show. He's like, we think this is probably what happened. Toph made the statue, is what he
said.
I'm crying.
Everyone ran with immediately.
Yeah.
All the tears.
Everyone on Tumblr is, like, making a big deal out of that. I don't think that's a big deal. Like,
what are you talking about?
The statue was a gift from the Fire Nation, though.
They're friends.
So I think that... this isn't because this isn't something that was ever part like written into a thing. It's just more of something like I've been over my whole thing on. If it's not in the show, then it's not canon. But
maybe it's like a Pottermore thing where it's just like
exactly
like, J.K. Rowling's head, but breaks.
This is like J.K. Rowling going over what she thinks happened to the characters after book 7, like in that video.
Or like what's her face?
But no, on the online when you were able to unlock like parts of
did it say made by Toph?
It said that it was a gift from the Fire Nation.
So that kind of contradicts that.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, which is why...
Toph, maybe... Zuko. There we go.
It's a gift from the Fire Nation. They didn't say who made it. Maybe they
not
made it all.
Explains it.
Maybe they Toph just, like, donated the funds.
Dude, I feel like this makes perfect sense. Like, if Zuko married Toph and...
Stop!
Lin
don't even, you're
done. The Fire Nation probably just donated the medal.
Yeah, it could have been that.
Wow, that's really half... butted.
Bolin, or Brian
no,
says,
half-baked.
Okay, Brian says about 105. We did get a note from the network. He talks about note from the networks a lot. So this isn't uncommon. Not an uncommon occurrence. We did get a note from the network about Bowling being drunk on noodles. I don't know if this is an exact quote. He doesn't phrase it like that. Response was to forward an episode of SpongeBob where a similar thing happened.
Yeah, they were like fighting over a donut, or Patrick. SpongeBob gave Patrick a donut, and Patrick was like, "What am I going to do with this?" And they were drunk.
Oh, I thought they were referring to the movie where they got drunk on ice cream.
Me too,
but that's their point. Is that their response now is to whenever they get called out on something, they send Nick clips.
Well,
of
yeah. So they said it happened a lot on Avatar. But they found out later after Nick censored something that it happened on SpongeBob. Nick is like it's a different tone, and Brian are like we don't care. So it's not like this happened a lot. It happened a lot where they found out afterwards. So Nick did get successfully censor a lot of stuff on Avatar, is what they're saying. On Drunk Noodles, that worked. We got away with it, he says.
They did get away with a lot of stuff. This season.
Like, I feel so. This means that there's even more pushing the boundary stuff that they tried to do.
Oh, man.
Avatar. Yeah.
Oh.
I know, I wish we'd seen it.
Sorry. Yeah, let it out.
At some point, Brian does say not all network notes are bad. He says one of the network notes. He talks a lot about how in the original script of episode one, they had a fight with Amon like in the second act or something.
And in the second scene.
In the second scene of the show, and then so Nick wrote back like slow it down, introduce the characters. So, and he's like, that was a productive network note. So cool.
Good job.
Yay. So not all not Nick writing giving them notes on stuff isn't a bad thing, it's just something that happens, I would say. Brian, so this is during 107, the aftermath. They're talking about when they're at the racetrack, and they're talking about how they extensively researched the car that Asami has. It's actually a 50s car, but they said they didn't care. And then they talk about the gear shift, and either Janet or David was that, like, that looks like a maze. And so Brian's like, it's like, it's a fantasy world. That's our excuse, default excuse for everything. And then he says at some point, he's kind of joking, he says, it's not our planet, it's a different one. And he's like, that's going on Tumblr somewhere.
And it did,
because I posted it. So, yeah.
That's the answer to a lot of questions, though. If you take that as canon, the fact that it takes place on a different planet.
So, he was saying it jokingly. I wouldn't take this as canon. This is what I thought anyway, so I'm going to continue to think it, but... Like, I mean, it kind of, we went over this on the minicast for the Avatar world. We scientifically determined that it has to be a different world. Like, this cannot be our world.
There's no Pangea there.
There's no Pangea.
Long time ago.
Yeah, continental stuff doesn't, like, work where the line in a way that would match up with our technology. It can't be our world.
And I'm sure someone will have mapped the constellations and pointed out that none of the stars match the stars in our night sky. Like, so they did in Titanic.
It has to be a fantasy world. But yeah, Brian saying it is kind of funny. But something I wanted to point out. Brian at some point says, we're not interested in characters that have no flaws. And it's like, have you seen Suki? Like, come on.
I think Suki's problem is that she just wasn't enough of a character, period.
Like,
not...
yeah, her character doesn't exist, like... and none of her traits were flaws. So yeah.
No. So,
someone,
yeah.
Someone on Tumblr was like, have you seen Asami? And I'm like,
excuse me?
Asami has flaws.
At the very least, Asami is twice as... that sentence was not going to sound good when it came out. It's still not working.
What is the matter with you?
She's way more of a character than Suki was, even though, yeah, she still doesn't have... I mean...
Yeah, Asami might not have flaws, but she's a very developed character.
Yeah.
More than Suki was.
I don't know.
There's minor things that if they get developed, they could be developed
away with it, yeah.
Very real character flaws that you could resolve in arcs and that sort of thing, but for the most part, I mean, she's at the very least a very well fleshed out character as opposed to Suki. Like, who were Suki's I don't know who Suki's parents were. Does she have siblings? Like, yeah. What are her likes and dislikes?
She was just Sokka's.
What are her likes and dislikes? She was Sokka's.
She was Sokka's girlfriend. Yeah.
Asami has a temper, and we know she can be resentful.
It's also
that's true. Yeah. Okay. I see those.
She trusts people really quickly. Like, she said, "I trust you. I feel safe with you, Tamako," when she barely knew him.
That's true. Yeah. No flaws. Yeah. Okay. Cool. I like.
Besides,
that.
You
cool.
can't insult Asami and think you can get away with it.
I know, she's actually just the best character.
Anonymous Tumblr user.
I could find who it was. I don't want
find to who it was.
Anyway,
name drop.
No, I don't want to name drop. Brian, in 108 commentary. So this is something that I have at least two of my casual Avatar friends have said when Korra started, and it's like, hey, what do you think of Korra? And they're like, I like it in general. Why? I don't understand why lightning bending is so common now and stuff like that. I feel like casual fans focus more on like the actual bending, maybe more than us.
And although that was a problem for a lot of people in the actual fandom too, when it was happening,
like
all these people,
it's still
do
a
this.
Little bit of a problem.
I feel like it's something we look past. But so here's Brian's response: the idea is lightning bending becoming common now is just the evolution of it. It's similar to sports where much more complicated things are being done now. Now, exact quote: once these things are pioneered, they become more common. And he said, and he talked about a backstory idea that Mako learned. This is separate. Learned lightning bending from lightning bolt Zolt. He picked it up on the streets. Quote: "We like this theme of good guys learning things from bad guys, Mike, but learning, but using it for good." So, see, I understand this concept. Like people run faster now than they did before. Like if you look in the Olympics, like it's all like the new records, like being broken and stuff.
They. I think he specifically referred to the famous backwards pole vault.
Yeah, it's
jump.
Like, I think pole vaulting is what he referred
to. Yeah, when the first person to ever do it, and now that's the default way to pole vault is backwards.
Yeah,
okay. So it's like metal bending. Like that became really big.
Yeah, but like look at like gymnastics, like Olympic gymnastics, and just in the last like 10 to 20 years, has come so far.
Yeah. So the question what they do now. The question is this a good comparison?
Well,
I think it is. It's physical.
What basically it boils down to is that these skills, you know, the first time they come up, you know, it's special and rare. And not to say that it isn't special and rare, but what it kind of points out is that in reality, everyone was capable of it. It just took a specific type of person with a specific set of skills or just natural abilities to realize that you are capable of it. And now more and more people realize, oh, we're capable of it too. Like the pole vaulting thing, where, you know, everyone jumped forward for the longest time, and then that guy, I forget his name, the guy who decided, you know what, I'm going to jump backwards, and it seemed at the time like an impossible thing, and only one person was doing it, and then suddenly you realize, oh, a lot of people can do it. And I think it's that way with lightning bending and metal bending. Look, metal bending, you know, no one did it because no one believed it was possible, and then suddenly Toph realized, this is something I can do, this is something other people are capable of, so it's like...
It should be noted that metal bending and core isn't common. They just have an elite task.
It isn't as common as lightning bending. But the fact that other people besides Toph, a bunch of other people besides Toph, are doing it. I mean,
well,
but that's the thing
maybe,
is that
I don't know 20.
We
you know, like
that
we don't
much lightning
well,
bending,
yeah,
have we?
I'm talking about metal bending.
Well, lightning bending. There's the scene of everyone.
Yeah,
of
but that's not a lot of people.
Plane.
No, but the power plane is run completely. At least what I took from it is run mostly by lightning.
So theoretically, there's tons more people.
Yeah, there's a lot of Mako's doing it. Mako's a street kid. I mean. When we were first introduced to it, you know, the only person who was capable of it was Azula. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I feel like
and Iroh.
I like the idea.
Well,
of
Iroh redirected
being an exclusive.
But he could lighten them.
More like it's as a sort of thing that only few people actually even can do. Like Zuko could never even do it. I know now that that's not how it works. But I like
well,
the idea.
Well, I think it's possible that they changed how it works. Like, I'm kind of with you on this.
We also don't know if Zuko was never able to do it. He might have been able to do it as he, like, got older and, like, got more advanced.
I get what Jeff is saying, and I agree with the fact that, you know, it's not that everyone can do it. It's just a lot more people. I cannot talk. A lot more people are capable of it than they realize because, it took one person to say, hey, this isn't as impossible as people think it is.
So... I think the question, so they're making the distinction that pretty much a lot of people are capable of lightning bending, whereas I think the impression we got from Avatar is that only Azula, like, was capable of it.
Yeah, it's a disconnect between I guess, two different theories on how lightning bending works.
Yeah, which I think the way that they present it in Korra probably makes more sense. Why would Azula specifically know how to lightning bend?
Yeah, well, it's funny because she turned out to be like the most unstable person of anyone, and that's, you know, the whole point of lightning bending is calmness within yourself and that sort of thing.
She,
so.
Maybe just that's
at the beginning,
her
she was very cold-hearted
so,
and evil.
Like,
she had no
wow.
Okay,
go ahead, Jeff.
Sorry.
No, anyway, let's move on. 109 commentary. Brian said they recast the gang's older voices several times, which is, we didn't know, I don't think. That's interesting.
It eventually worked out, though.
Yeah, he said they had trouble. Well, I don't know.
Well, I mean, in terms of, I don't have any complaints about any of the voice actors.
I'm 40 Toph, so don't you think it could stop?
Kate, what is her name? Kate Higgins? Is that her name?
They said they liked how Kate Higgins did Toph.
Yeah.
Brian says
Sam passed out and
specifically about the Tarlok and Aman in episode 109 when Aman is bloodbending or Tarlok's bloodbending Aman and then Aman like struggles a bit. We talked about this a lot on the podcast. Like he resists it. Brian says Tarlok actually did bloodbend him for a bit, but that's showing that. But that's showing that Amon bloodbending is more powerful. That's what I said. Brian, then Amon's, and then later, and then Amon also says, "I'll take care of him." And he says that because he is scared that everyone else could find out that Tarlok's his brother.
Led me to think that they were related and that Amon was a bloodbender.
Yeah, wasn't Jeff? You were the one who posted that entire theory, that, yeah. Right? You were the only one who got.
I thought he was a robot.
Are you going to go into the part where they talk about right after that with Korra attacking Amon?
Okay, well, I mean, yeah. Well, after they're outside, Bren says, "I love that Korra strikes first. Amon can't reveal that he's a bender, and she's out of range a little bit for." Yeah.
I like that a lot, actually, and I wish that it had been, if we had more time, that would have been something to play with, especially after, you know, Korra found out who he was, you know, the fact that there's a, you know, he can't obviously bloodbend from, like, a mile away, like, you have to be within a certain distance, and that would have been interesting to play with the fact that he has a handicap in that, you know, if, you know, he has to let her strike first, and, you know, she can stay far away and still hit him with bending, and he can't strike back, because then he'd reveal that he's a waterbender. And I find that to be really interesting, and I wish that had been something, that we were told or knew about before a year later on a commentary, and B, that would have been explored more.
Well, we could have went back and watched and interpreted it that way. I think I actually give them a lot of credit. I think this whole scene is one that's done very well from a perspective of you watching it without knowing what's going on, and it's cool, and then you watch it later, and things start to make sense. And
I wonder if it would have been cool for them to do like a little things, like maybe the snow slips under Korra's feet, and I don't know, just stuff happens throughout the show.
Hey,
and
there you go. Yeah.
Later, you realize, oh, that was all Amon doing.
Yeah, they could have maybe been more
sneaky bending.
At the same time, I feel like I'm glad they didn't give it away. Like, we didn't know, like, right before the finale, what it was going to be. Like, even though Jeff had the
thing, Jeff knew. Jeff was on it.
Jeff knew, but it wasn't like oh, all these clues, it's obviously going to happen. Like, that was a good... I think they handled that fairly well, even if it was an underwhelming conclusion.
I think the only thing the majority of us guessed was that he was going to be somehow affiliated with the Water Tribe, but we automatically assumed that meant Boomy.
Yeah.
Still would have been a cool storyline.
But I mean, whatever.
If it had been Boomy, it would have been really dark.
I want that.
That would have been great.
I want
That's why I want it to be there.
I want a long-form fanfic, taking it from X point in Korra Book 1, where it turns out Amon is Boomy.
I can do it for you.
Do it, do it, do it, do it, do it.
I can be that person.
Mel, you...
No, Mel, no.
You that excited? I wasn't me. Sam.
Yeah, Sam. Me.
Anyway, let's continue.
Sam, you are my favorite.
Mike talking about the scene where Korra finally airbends in the finale. We were finishing this up until a couple days before it was supposed to go on air. Brian says we are down to the wire. I never knew
that's
that.
Wow.
Like, we give...
I didn't even know that you could do that. I thought they had to, like, have it somewhere ahead of time.
I assume they had the first episode done, and then they frantically tried to finish while the show was catching up to them.
Well, they had the first episode done back during the first Comic-Con, where they talked about Korra.
Well, they had the first episode done for a while, because it got leaked. We know.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, back that summer before, like, the summer when the first Korra San Diego Comic-Con thing, because they had that trailer that was completely from the first episode. The first Korra trailer.
Yeah, that's true. It's possible that was done before the rest of the
episode. That was, like, a year before... Yeah. Anything.
And the point they make during this is that don't give us crap for taking forever to do it. We're really working on this right up until it airs.
I would not even have known that they were still editing it like a week within it premiering if they hadn't said anything.
Yeah, I've never.
And I still can't tell where places would be shoddy either. So.
It's the artist.
I don't think it's gonna be
the animation is beautiful. No one.
Well, not even that it would be shoddy, but nothing.
Hated the lighting in one hangar scene.
Yeah, so that could have been that they're rushed on the finale. But I feel like I don't. Yeah, he didn't really elaborate on that. It was the scene where Asami and Tiroshi are fighting. He says he just absolutely hates the lighting and coloring in that building. And I don't really understand it. Like, I don't know.
I liked it.
I've heard that from animators a lot before, though, is that one thing that they wish they could go back and change is the lighting on particular scenes, because it does mess with the colors, so. It's also a tone thing, too.
artists hate everything.
Sam is
that's
the voice. First,
that's the only thing I saw him really criticize, though. Or heard him really criticize in the whole thing.
And artists take forever to do things.
The last thing from Mike, he says, there's some criticism that... Korra at the end, very end of the show. There's some criticism that it was like a magic button got switched and Korra got all her powers back. But to me, it's way more than that. She has to reach this point of, like, total despair to be opened up to the idea of connecting to these other spirits and her spiritual side.
Okay, first of all, you don't switch a button. You push
no,
a
button. There are no buttons.
You flip a switch.
Anyway.
This is a special button.
I get what they were saying, though. I mean, I like the concept of that, yes, you have to reach your lowest point, like Aang says, and like Brian basically paraphrases, is when you're at your lowest point, you're open to the most change, but they didn't really show us that.
So this is a good concept. The problem is it actually just happened in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they had like an episode, or at least half an episode, with her not being Avatar.
Yeah, if they had ended like the first half of the finale with her losing her bending, I would have been more on board.
Yeah.
Or, like, have it happen midway through the series, and she's still trying to, like, get people to rally behind her, even though she can't bend.
Yeah.
That would have been cool. And we already know who, like, Amon sort of is, or what he's doing, at least. And then
we're rewriting
been,
the entire
like,
series.
I could rewrite this entire series, I totally would, okay? But I can't do that.
You can
do it. Don't help me on paper.
Yeah.
But I'm lazy. Anyways, and then, like, she could have just been like, I'm a normal person, you can't take my bending away now. What? And could have just learned to beat him with her fist.
And that's
or
it.
Done something crafty and learned practical skills. I have so many
So
times.
Basically the lesson is that it was within her the whole time and she didn't need her bending to show that. It was one of those.
Yeah, because like that's what Korra's like big thing was, that she didn't have spirituality and she
believe in
her
yourself.
Life.
It's like the Wizard of Oz. You've had the power to go back.
You are ruining my like
No, I'm processing.
There's no place
yeah.
like
she was always relied on her physical attributes and now she can't rely on them, so what does she
do? That was their point, was that, you know, this is what makes her vulnerable, is that you take away the thing that she drives her self-worth from, which is bending and her physicality, and then boom.
Yeah, and you can't have that.
When it's like she didn't even grow at all without it. Or with it.
Yeah, she didn't have time to grow without it. That's the thing, is that she had like a minute. It, or obviously for her it was like maybe like a couple weeks, but for us it was like a minute of growth time for her without.
And we didn't see it in any of it.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And I'm going to say that with the writing, they do something that Mel talked about at one point. They try to write a novel into a short story with this miniseries, and that's why it doesn't work. Because they had, like, a novel idea. Like, this was, like, a long, drawn-out story, and I believe, from the minds of Mike and Brian, we only get, like, pieces of it. You don't get all they have to put in.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, too. In more info, smaller info we didn't know before, the council page is a dude.
So much debate, finally.
One of the voice actors was like, is that a dude? Did we know that? One of them says that.
I think Janet was asking.
Yeah, I think Janet was confused, yeah.
I love her so much.
Mean,
she was like, I love that guy, but I don't know.
Yeah. Stuff. The things on Iki's heads are called snoods.
I can't get over that. Allie really thinks it's funny.
I don't know why is that so funny.
It's a funny word. Can we talk about the kid actors with Logan?
They apparently liked Logan, who voices Milo a lot.
They also mentioned that they were animating the children slightly. I don't know if it's going to even be noticeable, but slightly.
They said they're going to become taller.
I bet Sam and I will notice.
Oh, and then there's fart jokes.
Oh, okay. So he says they say that Ryu is the who co-directs all the episodes.
Why?
It's the reason that there's a bunch of fart jokes with Milo.
Why?
At some point, he says Mike had to negotiate with Ryu on how many fart jokes got in the episode.
Mike needs to renegotiate a little bit more.
I mean, they're all terrible.
They're all unnecessary.
They're just all terrible. And they say we never did fart jokes in Avatar.
Lies.
See episode 307 when at the end it's like, is there bathrooms in the spirit world?
Yeah, that was weird.
Just took it completely.
Also, 107.
307. What happened in 107?
He's like, I seriously need to use the bathroom. Or was that 108? Or 106? I don't remember.
You guys aren't doing your homework.
I know. Right?
Yeah.
Did you just call Sam Allie, Mel?
I called Sam Sam. Don't be so narcissistic.
Well.
Jeez, okay. Oh, Janet plugs her JV Club podcast at one point, which exists, and Brian's like, it's so weird that Cora has a podcast.
Oh, wait. I don't know which one it's on, but Janet, I guess, got bored with introducing herself, and at one point she introduced herself as Seychelle Gabriel.
Yeah.
And then at another point, she introduced herself as the wardrobe director.
I didn't remember that.
I don't remember which one it is.
Did she like put on a voice?
She's like, I'm Janet. No, she's like, I'm Janet Varney. I'm the wardrobe director. I make and sew all the little cartoon costumes, and sometimes they let me voice Cora. And it was funny. She's great. She's the best. I love her.
She tweeted at Mel.
She tweets at me. Couple times.
You're like best friends.
Me too.
I think it's pity tweet.
Oh, here's an interesting one. Brian says, we don't have to water down the show for Nickelodeon. Says if the show was on another network, other network, everything would have to be okay in every episode. He's talking about how like episodes end on down notes a lot. And see, I think that's Disney. Anyone?
I thought it was Disney too.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
When he says, if our show was on another unnamed network, we'd have to wrap up. With everyone.
What was the last time? Oh yeah, never mind.
Whoa!
Yeah, forget what I was about to say. I was about to ask, what was the last time that Disney made an animated show? And I'm like, oh, they have those.
I mean, Gravity Falls for one.
Phineas and Ferb.
That stuff happened in Gravity Falls.
Wait, Gravity Falls is Disney?
Yes. Yeah. It's great. Okay. And
what about Phineas and Ferb? I love
that. That's also Disney, yes.
I need to watch those too.
Gravity Falls is still on.
Also, Dylan, you need to watch Adventure Time, just saying.
I'm watching Adventure Time.
Like, I mean, get caught up, though.
Yeah, I will.
Do it more.
When there was the shot of. In 107 Revelation. Wait, is that? No, the aftermath. When Asami, like, shocks Hiroshi with the thing glove. He says the shot originally after Cora and Mako react, it pans over to Bolin, and he's like, whoa! But they cut it because it took out of the moment. See, I think that's that shows how one-dimensional they made Bolin.
Yeah,
it really makes me upset.
That the only reaction you can have to something like that happening is like a comedic reaction.
And he literally had like 10% presence in the finale, too. Like, everyone else was doing...
Like, not even, he had like 5.
Everyone else was doing these awesome things and had emotional growth happening and this and that.
Bolin was just...
He was literally like a moving prop at one point, essentially.
Like, the scene where they're stuck in the bars, he could have, like, had, like, some inner growth where he actually has to, like, find out how to metal band on the spot to get them out of there.
Naga's just like, meh.
I'm here.
Just like that.
Yep.
Wow.
That would have been so simple!
Mike
about... I think Brian just need to hire me to host the show.
Yeah, they should just hire you, Britt. Mike about the anime effects, quote-unquote anime effects, when they're used sparingly, it adds more impact.
I know, Dylan, you're not a fan of them, but I just love the one where, I guess it was Iki, the one who was like, did you know that Cora likes manga?
That's the best one. That's not even an anime effect, though. They, like, I don't even know what they did with that.
I love the Iki effect. I hate the Cora one in that episode.
No, I love the Cora one.
I hate the Cora one.
I just love that.
I hate the Iki one. I love the Cora one.
No,
I love them both. Sister has done that to me, and I nearly punched her in the face.
Cora likes Mako.
Yeah.
Guys, I drew tattoos on my arm.
Good. Are you that bored with the podcast?
I've been drawing
this
whole time. I don't know what
I'll take pictures of it when we're done.
Can you Snapchat it?
Okay.
No. Why not?
You know who really needs to reply to Snapchat? Mel. You know why?
Be on topic here.
Edit that out, Dylan. Just edit it out.
Allie, why did you send me a Snapchat that says hate you?
Because you were talking about Toph and Aang with the statue.
Oh.
That was really early. Wow, it was really late.
And Dylan thought our conversation was lacking.
Oh, at one point Brian's like, Janet, are you tweeting?
Yeah. Janet, and then they were like 9 months before anyone's gonna.
Janet's live tweeting this commentary, which will come out 9 months later. He says,
"I swear to God, if she's on our podcast, she's just gonna be tweeting the whole time."
She wouldn't. I don't know. Maybe
she would never be on our podcast.
All right, Operation, get Janet on the podcast.
She would never be on our podcast. Stop. Gearhead out of the clouds.
Steve Bloom is going to be doing a few voices for Book 2. Quote of some creatures. So we continue to see that the spirits will be talking.
I mean, we don't know that.
No, we do. Great Alas voicing the dark spirit.
And she could be just making noises. Like, do you make
no, yeah, do you sure think they'd hire Grey Delisle to just make noises? Do you think anyone hires Grey Delisle to just make noises?
I feel like she would do
that. Obviously
not.
Okay, yeah, I'm not saying she wouldn't do it. I'm just saying that no one would hire her just to be like, can you, like, make some grunts here and there?
No.
What's the matter with you?
It's not a grunt. It's a spirit noise.
Yeah. Like, what do you want?
See, I feel like we should have seen it coming that the spirits are, like, talking, like...
What was that? Oh, spirits have spoken. Ellie, spirits talk all the time. I mean, friggin', what's his name? Ko was talking to Aang.
Yeah, but that's in the... We've never seen a spirit talk in the physical world, I believe.
Lion turtle.
For all we know, she won't be talking to the
physical world. Yeah, I don't know if the lion turtle counts as spirit, but yeah.
It doesn't,
but yeah.
The lion turtle is...
Because,
I don't know what the lion turtle counts.
So yeah, how are these spirits taking forms that they can actually have voices? Because we know the dark spirits some crazy, crazy abstract thing. How is that thing going to talk?
Maybe that's the plot line there. Yeah, is why like, is this happening?
Yeah, I feel like it.
I'm guessing there's not.
They're rebel spirits, guys. They can talk.
A telepathic.
Maybe they speak telepathic.
Yeah, actually, that would be pretty interesting.
That would be cool.
And I don't know if it counts, but we have seen avatars talk in the real world.
I was going to mention that, but I figured Dylan.
I was going to say something.
Avatars talking.
Yeah, I mean,
like how Pikachu talked to Zhang Zhang, or how Kyoshi talked to all the villagers.
Oh, okay.
It's been done.
Yeah, that's true.
I killed Chin the Conqueror.
I mean, yeah. You could make the argument considering the Avatar is like the spirit of the world that the spirit is always talking in the physical world, but I guess that doesn't count.
Uh-huh.
In a physical body. I miss Heibei. Let's bring him back.
Yeah, he's cool.
Let's have him talk.
And Rafiki.
Let's have him talk.
Rafiki? Oh, God.
Yeah, the monkey guy. I know. Yeah, okay.
The monkey.
Oh, go away.
Go away.
Go
away.
That's actually my favorite quote of the show.
Wow.
Fun fact. Mike says at some point they had Korra unlocking her airbending as early as episode 8, but then they realized it needed to be done in the finale.
Why?
I don't know why.
Why did they realize
that? I don't know why.
No explanation. Just
need answers.
Brian says, I know everyone hates on Mako. To me, even if he had transgressions, what he does in this episode for Korra, referring to the finale, is really heroic. And romance aside, is really selfless, and I really love that. Him just trying to defend Korra, I love that stuff, even if they weren't romantically tied in any way.
What did he do?
He shocks Amon in this.
That wasn't that.
That's just being a friend, I feel like.
That's what he's saying. I think that's what the point he's making is that.
But
in the context of the scene, he shocks Amon and, like, Amon's about to take his bending away, I think. I don't know. Like, he's giving himself up, I guess, kind of. Like
he's attacking.
Yeah.
It's not as good as a Beifong sacrifice.
Exactly. But...
I think they talk about that, too, during that.
Mako's reputation is just too tarnished for us to.
They say that a few times. They're like, when we're after we wrote, before we've done any of the animation process, they're like, usually we don't know how fans are going to react to things, but we're pretty confident people are going to love Lynn.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good.
Wow, you're all so excited about this, Mel.
I love Lynn. It's okay. If there was just a TV show with Asami and Lynn getting into shenanigans, that would be great for me.
That'd be the best.
They could solve
Legend five. Of. I don't know what you're
saying. Legend is a ship. Don't even do this.
No, I'm just saying.
Legend of Awesome Ladies.
Yeah, there you go. Legend of Awesome Ladies.
Brian says they had a lot of ideas how to force Amon to waterbend, but then they figured out it had to be done as a second nature, so Korra knocks him out of the window, and it's like a response to drowning.
That did happen.
Yes.
Oh.
Interesting. Lots of scenes with Korra's parents later books.
I'm excited. Yes. Mel just, yes, she said.
Janet brought up the parents too. Jeff sent us that thing on Tumblr where Janet, they were talking about in the first episode when it was Jeff.
I sent that to you a while ago.
It was definitely Jeff. Anyway, there was the scene where Korra's saying goodbye to her parents, and they were like, and here's Korra's parents, and Janet had some really attractive parents, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so I guess I should talk about this. So there's two separate things here. One, they talk about Lauren Montgomery. She came on for book two. She's a supervising producer for book two, and she helped out with book one, and they had a scene initially where Asami... join the United Forces at the end as like wrapping up her arc before they
love that so much.
Before they knew that they're gonna have more.
She could be best friends with Zuko Jr. Jr.
Okay. Okay, but if they knew they were gonna have more and they cut that out, why didn't they just like make Korra lose her bending and then just like leave it like that?
Well, that's what I mean. They didn't want to change their story, Atlee, just because
they changed the zombies.
No, but that's like, okay, they didn't want to change the main part of the story just because they found out, oh, now this is happening. I mean, this is the story they wanted to tell, and that's what they did.
Okay, Mel, help me tell the story, because I'm a little fuzzy on the details. But they talk about a joke pitch or idea.
I don't have the highlights up. Give me 1 second.
No, I mean, I'm gonna read it, so. Okay, so it's Asami's joined the United Forces. I guess it's like a build-off of this, but it was a joke. It never actually was happening. And Iroh was there, and Asami's like... Asami ends up with Iroh. The way I remember it is that Mako objects, and Mako's like, but he's like 36, and Asami's like... And Asami says, I'm 29, how old are you? And Mako's like, I'm 19. And Asami's like, horrified to hear that. That's how I remember it. I think that's not exact.
That's about the gist of it.
So the joke is that Asami's older than she looks. So it's possible that that joke is grounded in the reality that General Iroh actually is 36.
I mean, he looks like an older version of Zuko, who was like 16 or 17.
But they say it as part of this joke pitch, so I'm really unsure of whether that's true, but it kind of sounds like that's actually how old he is.
Yeah, I mean, I'd place him around in his 30s.
I mean, people are shipping him with Asami, but so, like, that's probably not going to happen if
he's... They're supposed to be, like, what?
Asami's, like, 19.
19, yeah.
Yeah.
So 18. Am I.
17.
Wow, what a coincidence.
I'm, like, that much closer to being Asami.
You're actually Asami at this point. Yeah, I mean, there's no getting around it.
Yeah.
So then who am I?
I mean, you're Korra.
You don't want me to answer
see,
that much.
General Iroh being...
I'm also 19, though.
I really shouldn't say this, but
Jeff was saying something.
Yeah, well, okay, Jeff first, because my thing's unimportant.
No,
I could see General Zuko Jr. being like a rival of Varric, just like in the shipping business. Maybe like he's shipping.
Oh God,
delicious cargo.
The shipping business.
Well, okay.
Okay. I'm sorry, that was my bad. I took that in a bad way.
I'm slow sometimes, but I get Varric is using shady shipping practices, real shipping practices, and then General Iroh is like, you know, trying to track him down sometimes.
Shipping or UPS?
Or like
the actual UPS. Definition of shipping. Okay, interesting.
Which is, there are two.
Which is...
Sending packages.
You mean FedEx or like?
I'm not even gonna say that.
Is anyone still listening?
No.
No.
Someone tweeted at us last after last podcast. I was like, no one's listening during trivia, and no one's gonna like it. And someone tweeted us saying they did like it.
I still don't know what any of that was about.
Oh, I should say that we had a surprise trivia at some point. And I think it was a failure, but I'm not. I think it was probably
It
was a failure.
Not in terms of Jeff's chat client, because that was awesome, but in terms of learning DF can't support this at the moment, and also that no one showed up. So I don't know if we'll be doing that.
Excuse you, that wasn't a failure.
The wind.
Wait, that was your failure. What does Zuko Jr. have to do with this guy shipping?
Maybe they'll be rivals, and like
he said, he's using shady practices, and Iroh is part of like a police force, kind of. So he's gonna be trying to.
So it was just an unfortunate.
I feel like his police force thing really has more important things to do, though.
Yeah, I don't. It's. I mean, they're on the seas, so that
there's nothing more important than love, Allie.
Anyway,
what are you talking about?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
What are we talking about?
Dylan, you're saying something.
I don't even know anymore.
God.
I think that mostly wraps it up. Mel, do you have any other thoughts from the commentary? I have to go over the animatics. Okay.
Dumb. Don't
me off the stuff. I didn't have anything. If you were
I knew you had nothing. I could tell.
Glad you know me.
That was mean.
Dylan, look at the clock.
I'm aware this podcast is only it's 15 minutes less than it says it is.
Allie, I have to be up at like
midnight.
Seven.
Oh, I don't care. You can
calm
leave.
Down.
I
have to be up at 7.
I'm going to kill all of you.
Did I not just say
Allie, you're not actually going to sleep when it ends. So don't
Yeah, let's get real. Allie, you get off Skype and go on Tumblr for like 5 hours. Don't act like this is a problem for you.
So let me talk about the animatics. The most interesting for me things from the animatics was looking at how it was different from the final product. And you could really, it was often, in many cases, especially with backgrounds and things that weren't the characters' faces, like, you could tell how much influence the Korean animators have over the animation, because a lot of stuff was different or more developed. In the Revelation, Mako's apartment looked different in the final animation. It's possible that was something they told him. In the animatic, Jinora was blushing when Mako walks in. So maybe that was an original thing where Jinora, it was more
Wait, in what scene?
When Jinora's like, ooh, he's cute.
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that the firebender who drives you crazy?
Yeah. Like
you've been spending a lot of time together lately.
Oh, I love Jinora.
That hand move.
So maybe initially she had a crush on Mako. I don't know.
A lot of time ago.
In the anime, the Zuko statue was like, it was a firebender, but it didn't look like Zuko. So maybe they added that in later.
Does it look like Zuko now?
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
In the most specific thing... Oh, everything's very... very, like, general, and then when they have Amon taking Lightning Bolt's old bending away, they have it in color, very detailed, showing how it goes from lightning to fire to nothing, and they kind of talk about that in the commentaries a little bit, how they made sure that was right, and so it's like, that's, like, very close to the final animation, even though it's on the animatic.
That doesn't really make sense, though, personally.
Like, the process of the...
Lightning and fire are very opposites. You don't fade from lightning to fire.
Well, I guess that was in terms of the way they've always portrayed lightning and fire in the way bending works. Because, I mean, in Zuko and Azula... No, it wasn't Zuko and Azula's. That fight they had in the abandoned town in, like, the beginning-ish / middle-ish of Season 2, they showed... That was the first time they started animating. Azula's flames would come out blue and then turn to... back to orange, and she would do lightning that would turn back to fire. So it's just the way their physics work.
Did she ever do that though?
Did she ever do what?
She changed
colors. Remember her ever doing lightning to fire?
I believe she did in I don't know what it is. What was the town?
The chase.
Yeah, but that fight scene at the end. I mean, I think it's just the way their physics work is that it goes from, okay, here's lightning, which is the pinnacle of firebending ability, and it goes down and down and down and down the ladder of until you get to basic fire, and then it's gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's just in terms of maybe it takes more... It's chi, you know. I'm trying to explain it. What maybe they were thinking.
In the commentary,
I'm just playing devil's advocate. Essentially,
in the commentary, they say that lightning's like they explain it as like a more like advanced form of firebending.
Yeah, it's like the pinnacle of firebending.
I don't know if they properly portray that in the series or not. I'm not sure.
I mean, they in so many words they do. They in so many words they do because Iroh when he talks about it, he says, you know, it's a highly advanced thing, and only certain people can do it, and so, I mean, I think it's just that it might have something to do with chi, it might not, but on the most basic level, this is the pinnacle of firebending, and we just regress back to basic until there's nothing left.
In the voice animatics, the Amon, the whole sequence of Amon and Korra on the Danang Memorial Island, it's almost, the animatic is very, very close to what we see in the final thing.
They also...
Yes?
Well, they said that scene where Korra fights the Equalists inside was based on a scene they had planned for Aang and Zuko in the original series.
Yeah, it being dark and fire is the only thing you can see.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
I know.
Wow.
I don't remember where I was. Oh, the flashbacks. The flashbacks weren't part of the animatic. Which makes sense. They use the flashbacks from the final product they got from the actual flashback in whatever episode it was, Out of the Past.
Mm-hmm.
So they inserted it later. But in the voice in the night, it certainly seemed like they knew that it was going to be there. As opposed to in When Extremes Meet, it seemed like they decided later to insert flashbacks into that episode. Like it wasn't written like that. That's my analysis of the animatic. In The Winner Is, there's a whole part with Shiro at the end of the episode Because it's the last time we see him, I think. He's like, this is after he gets, like, shocked or something. This has been Shiro Shinobi signing off. And they just didn't, like, and that didn't end up being in the episode.
And he died.
I don't know if he died, but...
Okay, Sam.
They, like, exit his character, probably.
He's probably dead.
Yeah, and that's it. Alright.
What?
What do you mean, what? I was saying highlights of the animatics. The animatics go on for, like, there's, like, 6 to 8 minutes, maybe more, from each episode, and they do it for about maybe close to half of the episodes. So you can check that out, I guess. Cool. Animatic just being motion storyboards put together so that they look like motion. Okay, let's start. Oh, the thing I was going to say, and I don't think I should say it, because it's just going to boost Ali's ego a bunch.
Oh, come on. Why?
When I started hearing Janet talk during the commentaries.
Oh, no,
I
had, no,
I
had, no.
Should I not say it?
I know what's coming.
I heard her voice, and I was like, oh, that sounds like Ali a little bit.
In our theory, Ali made her voice sound like Janet's.
Ali subconsciously.
Ali trained her voice to sound like Janet Varney.
She changed her voice. No, it's fact. Ali changes her voice to sound like Janet Varney.
Oh, are you saying I'm just that talented?
No, I'm saying you're that obsessed.
Yeah.
No, anyway. She and I are just actually the same person.
I'm sorry, did she tweet you twice? I don't think
she actually did. So
she retweeted a picture of yours.
Yeah, and she tweeted me again for something else that I can't remember, but it was about Korra. Yeah, she tweeted me
twice, and in the same night, Gray Delisle favorited one of my tweets.
By the way,
she also favorited mine, and she retweeted
it. Not like Mel and Ali are special, Janet just responds to all her tweets.
Yeah, Janet's really nice.
Janet's just a good person.
What's her Twitter?
Janet, come on our podcast!
At Janet.
No, I don't want
Janet Varney, no spaces, yeah.
It's going to be very, very sad.
Gray Delisle is not one of those people who responds to everyone, too.
Because Janet Varney has, like, an actual podcast.
Oh, well, Britt actually tweeted at her, would you like to be on the podcast?
Yeah.
No.
I'm glad Britt was the one.
Yeah, why are you against it?
The team.
But she's on an actual podcast, and we look like fools.
Oh, our podcast is pretty good.
Maybe she wants to do a fun podcast.
You don't even know.
With fans. And I asked, and I'm not important, so another of you will look bad.
Britt took one for the team, okay? We were all thinking about
Britt,
it.
Britt, you are important. Anyway, let's wrap this up.
Oh, now you think so.
No.
Oh, I probably said you weren't before.
Wow.
I'm cranky today, okay?
He was very cranky earlier.
I've been your main host, Dylan, co-host. I've been
we're done?
Just shutting it down.
Mel, Ali, Sam, Britt, Jeff. Jeff has dropped call because the internet's not being
here. Here in spirit and in chat.
Yeah. It's getting hot in here.
Tevin Rector, AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Musical remixes by Luke Tripp. The song in the quote lodge is by from the Yoshida brothers. I've never actually said that before in the credits. I have a credits page now on the podcast page, so you can actually look up who gets credits for the music, which are the Yoshida brothers, Luke Tripp, and Jeremy. I forgot his last name. Is it Zuckerman? No.
Zuckerman.
No.
Yes,
it is
Zuckerman.
Ben,
yeah. Jeremy Zuckerman. Yeah, it is Zuckerman. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, the only music of his we use is the thing that's playing right now, which is a remix by Luke Tripp. So.
Oh, I hear. Oh my god!
So what happened was Sam's headset fell off just now.
It was lovely.
Yeah,
Sam.
Anyway. Future podcast. Next week, we'll probably be podcasting on a combined podcast on the Korra soundtrack and the Search Part 2. We're probably going to do those at one podcast.
Oh, the Search Part 2.
Sam's dying.
Oh, and if you're curious, the Search Part 2 comes out. I think it's not actually out. Like, they say the publication date is today, but it's not on Amazon yet. But it's online if you want to find it somewhere.
Yeah, totally.
Because it leaked on iTunes. They put it up early. It's not like people, like, stole it. They accidentally put it
up. They paid for it early.
Yeah, they paid for it.
It's legal, so it's okay.
Well, not everyone else
doing it. It's not really legal.
Yeah.
Not illegal,
and
though.
And Comic-Con is on the 19th. We won't be podcasting it until the Sunday after, I believe, because I'll be out of town. But
got stuff to do.
Yeah, so that's the current plan. But yeah, our Comic-Con podcast always... just randomly trying to figure out everything they say, which is too much and too
it's
much
going
hard.
To be wonderful.
I don't know. I don't. I see. The question is, will we get a release date?
No.
I don't know.
You definitely watched, literally, it's going to be one of those things where it's like the week of, they're like, and this week I'll go.
Yeah.
What?
See, it's what? So it's possible that this airs in September. I'm thinking it's not likely.
It's definitely going to be December 31st at like.
I mean, but people shouldn't complain about that, because that just means, you know, it's just. It's like more of Korra in a way, you know. Like, yeah,
really.
You got a long hiatus, but you got a longer. I mean, prolonging the inevitable that when Korra's over, there's not going to be any more Avatar. I mean, they said they're done.
Well, at least for the foreseeable future,
they're done with this series when they're done with Korra. So be glad that you're getting more time to do nothing but sit and wait.
We'll see. Anyway.
Dylan's a pessimist and in a bad mood.
I don't think it's ever going to air. I think like somebody's going to go into like the next to-dos and like steal the master tapes.
It's in the recent EW article, and, like, it just got released a couple things ago. It does say later this year.
There's going to be Korra ninjas, like this big
executive. Once Korra's over, what are we going to do with our lives?
Let's not think about that right now, okay?
Okay, you weren't here for the first time when Avatar ended.
You know who wasn't here for the break between Avatar and Korra? Everyone but Sam and Jeff. So.
Look, I was here. Yay. I just wasn't with you.
Yeah, you all.
I wasn't on the podcast yet. So.
You were all here, just not like here.
What do you want to end on?
Korra.
No.
Journey.
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like we ended on that last one.
I don't care. She's magical.
Michael Sarah.
Guys, podcast listeners, my Skype icon is Michael Sarah with a
picture. This is like her third picture of Michael Sarah as her Skype icon.
Do you even like Michael Sarah? Do you just like?
He's okay.
You just put him as your Skype.
It's a funny face.
I like floating Michael Cera better than Michael.
Wait, no, let's end on, what was the ship? Janchel?
Oh, Janchel.
Janchel.
We should actually make sure it's Janchel first.
Though. I think it's Janchel.
This is the longest ending ever.
It's Janchel, yeah. And I tried to make that Tumblr, but a few Canadians got the DVD a week early.
A few Canadians.
those Canadians got it a week early, so that's probably the registered.
Canadian.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Sam,
let's end on Janchel.
Damn Canadian.
Everyone's new favorite ship.
It's not really new, but
oh, we don't.
One, two, three, Janchel.
Janchel.
Sure, honey.